University Forum is a presentation of Nebraska Wesleyan University, which brings speakers and performers to the campus throughout the semester to lecture on a variety of topics. The opinions expressed by the speakers do not necessarily represent the opinions of Nebraska Wesleyan University or of this station. Today, University Forum presents Dr. John Walker, Nebraska Wesleyan Philosophy Professor. Walker's lecture is entitled, The Aesthetics of Country Music. Walker is a self-proclaimed recovering native of Oklahoma. He plays traditional country blues music for spiritual sustenance and teaches philosophy to support himself, his family, and his habits. Walker studied philosophy and American civilization at Brown University, where he later earned his doctorate degree. While at Brown, he was a member of Phi Beta Kappa. Walker has played traditional blues and country and old folky tunes in bars and coffee houses and churches and hayfields and places too fierce to mention since the mid-60s. He's currently trying to keep up with 20-year-olds in noontime basketball at Wesleyan and working on a recording project to be called Big Leg Women and Clean Head Men. Join us now for Dr. John Walker and University Forum.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be anywhere. I am an Okie. I was born and raised in Oklahoma. And I am reminded this morning of an old Okie saying, one of those old Okie sayings, which goes like this. Some men talk because they got something to say. And some men talk because they got to say something. Well, this morning, I got to say something. And I hope I have something to say. Listen to this. A country singer sings more sincere than most entertainers. He knows about the hard times he sings about. When he sings, Sending My Mother Home, sending my mother home, he sees her a-laying right there in her coffin. You got to know a lot about hard work to be a country singer. And you've got to have smelt a lot of horse manure. A country singer knows about these things, and he sings like he feels them. Hank Williams. We might just quit right there. There's the aesthetics of country music in a short paragraph. One thing I hope to accomplish in our time together this morning is to disabuse ourselves of the notion that the phrase, the aesthetics of country music, is an oxymoron. Now, I know there are some of you who think that. There are some of you who are country music fans. Dyed-in-the-wool, die-hard country music fans. I mean, you wear blue jeans and cowboy boots, even if you don't know the first thing about riding a horse. You drive a pickup. You drink beer out of long-neck bottles only. You go to the Sky Lane Bar every Friday at 5 o'clock. You don't eat quiche under any conditions. And for you, for those of you who fit that description, some or all of those characteristics applying to you. The notion that there can be a philosophy or an aesthetics of country music is strange, shall we say? You say you want to say, give me a break. But there are others of you, too, who are sort of at the other end of the spectrum, musically and aesthetically speaking. I know there are some of you here who have an attitude about country music that makes you want to stick your nose up in the air and walk by whenever you hear anything about it or read about it or hear it played on the radio or anything like that. So to you, too, the notion that there can be an aesthetic of country music, are you kidding me? You want to say, give me a break, too. Well, I'd like to convince both members of those camps. Well, that's too much to hope for. I can't do that. I'm not going to convince you. What I would like to do is have us rethink those ideas, whether there can be such a thing as an aesthetic of country music. What I'm going to do is give you some definitions. That's what philosophy is all about, after all. A philosophy, you've heard the old definition of a philosopher, an old Okie definition of a philosopher. He's someone who makes up definitions that nobody can understand and asks you questions that nobody can answer in such a way as to make you think it's your fault. Well, I'm going to make up some definitions to begin with. and try to answer some questions about what country music is, what art is, how one might go about evaluating aesthetically art, and in particular, country music. I'm going to spend about 20, maybe 30 minutes doing that, and then I'd like to play you a few examples of some of these categories that I have or will have made up. And I invite you to stick around if you want to talk about some of these ideas later on. I did grow up in Oklahoma, and I grew up listening to the music of Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys on the radio and loving it. When I went to Brown, first thing people said to me was, "You're from Oklahoma?" "Oh, no." "Sorry to hear that." And then they would say, "You like country music?" And they'd say, "Oh, no, I'm sorry to hear that." But I do like country music, and I guess I always have. In the past decade or so, there has been a kind of resurgence in our culture of a professed liking of country music. To a purist or a traditionalist like myself, this is not all to the good. I mean, when you look at TV and see television programs about country music that are like Las Vegas entertainment, and you have Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton dressed up in tuxedos and long evening gowns handing out awards on country music award ceremonies, one is given pause. At least traditionalists and purists, when it comes to country music, are given pause. When you think about what's going on in a culture in which Kenny Rogers and Doc Watson can be included in the same musical genre, questions occur to you if you're bent to reflection, as I am sometimes. What is going on here? What is country music anyway? I made up a list of people who are, either by their own acknowledgement or by our culture's recognition, country artists, country musicians. Johnny Cash, Kris Kristofferson, Waylon Jennings, George Jones, Linda Ronstadt, Bonnie Raitt, Hank Williams, Conway Twitty, Charlie Pride, Jerry Lee Lewis, Randy Travis, Porter Wagoner, Doc Watson, Emmylou Harris, and so on. At first glance, it seems to me that these people don't have a lot in common, and yet they're all included in the class of country musicians, country artists. So, I'm given pause, and I wonder, what is country music? Is it a distinctive art form at all? And if it is, what would it be that would make any instance of country music a good thing of that kind? Okay, first distinction I'd like to make is that between pop music and folk music. Pop music is simply music that happens to be popular in a given culture at a given time. I want to read you something from a man named Ian Robb out of this magazine called Sing Out, in which he makes a kind of a distinction that I have in mind. He writes as follows. Popular music is generally not the free expression of real people. It is a product of an industry, manufactured to exacting norms and standards, and designed above all else to make money. The norms and standards dictate that a song should not say anything important about anything, that it should have a standard length and format, and that the subject matter should be heterosexual love, with a dose of sexual innuendo, thinly or thickly disguised, depending on how much the targeted age or socioeconomic group can handle. It might be, and very often is, argued that popular music gives ordinary people what they want, and is thus real people's music. In reality, though, popular music tells people what they want, and then, preying upon their instinctive middle-class addiction to conformity and emulation, it sells them more of it. Well, that makes a lot of sense to me. I think that's true. Popular music is music that is designed with a predetermined end in mind. In our culture, and maybe in all cultures in which there is popular music, that end is to make money. Folk music, on the other hand, is music that arises spontaneously out of ordinary people's everyday living conditions. It is a spontaneous musical response to those conditions, and thus cannot be predicted, cannot be pre-planned, cannot be predetermined. That's the hallmark of folk music, its spontaneity. And in that, it differs from popular music. I'm not going to make other distinctions between other kinds of music, such as so-called serious music or classical music or jazz music, though those distinctions can be made. None of those, I would say, are pop music either. But I want to distinguish for our purposes today simply folk music from pop music, and make that distinction in terms of the spontaneity of folk music and the pre-calculated design of popular music. Within folk music, there are various classes you can make up, and since I'm speaking today, I'm going to make up my own. Blues is the folk music of black people in the South. Speaking in terms of its primitive origins, okay, that's what blues is. That's where it comes from. Blues is the folk music. It's that music that arose spontaneously out of black people's experience in the South. Their experience centrally of what W.J. Cash in his book, The Mind of the South, called that peculiar institution, slavery. Jazz, I would say, also defining it in terms of its primitive origins, is the folk music of black people once they had moved from the South to urban centers and transplanted, as it were, that folk music that had its origin in the cotton fields of the Deep South to big cities like New Orleans and St. Louis. The music that under those conditions spontaneously arose as an expression of those people's response to their condition was jazz. These distinctions, you will have noted, are glib. Not entirely false, but they're a little bit glib, because there is such a thing as white people playing jazz music, and there is such a thing as urban or city blues that's not, does not have a rural or country basis. Still, essentially, I think it is true that in terms of their primitive origins, blues and jazz music can be defined as originating in black people's experience. Country music, looked at in the same way in terms of its primitive origins, is the folk music of the white, rural, American southerner. It's the folk music that arose out of those people's responses to their living conditions, unique as they were in the South, determined, again, by what W.J. Cash called that peculiar institution, and by two other things, by the essentially rural setting of people in the South, as distinguished from people living in the industrialized North, and by the peculiar fundamentalist religion of the people living in the South. Those three things had an effect on the music that people brought with them to this country from the old country, which made the music of the South different from the music that evolved in the North. There surely is a folk music of the North also. I don't know what you would call it, but it's different from the music of the South. And there are three fundamental reasons for that: slavery, and the intermingling of white people and black people under the conditions of slavery, the rural, agrarian setting of people living in the South, and their religion. Okay? That's what country music is. It's the folk music of rural white people living in Southern America. Or you could say this, too. Any music that is in a predominant way dependent on or derivative from that kind of music is country music. So you can say Randy Travis, say, he's a country musician, a country artist. What he does is music that is, I think, it's easy to see, is music that is derivative from that original folk music of the white rural southerner. Okay, that's what country music is. Now, I'm going to shift gears just a little bit and make a few remarks about what art is, and then return to country music and try to understand that, country music, from an aesthetic point of view. The first thing to do in coming to an understanding of what art is, I believe, is to distinguish art from craft. Something is the product of craft if it is the result of a predetermined end. Architecture, for example, is a perfect example of craft. You have a blueprint, and a skilled craftsman or craftswoman is someone who could take the blueprint and put the building up. You know already what it's going to be. And then a person who is skilled in that craft is a person who can take that idea of what you want in the end and make it. Art, on the other hand, is essentially creative. Whatever else it is, art is creative. And what that means is that the end cannot be predicted beforehand. No one knows, not even the artist. At least no one knows clearly, at least, what the final product is going to be when they start. In that, art differs from craft. This is not. This is just a distinction. It's not to say that art is better than craft or craft is better than art. It is not to say that artists are not craftsmen or that craftsmen cannot be artists. All those propositions, indeed, are false. But it is simply to make that distinction between craft and art. The reason for making it is to evaluate something as art, you have to recognize it for what it is. It's not craft. And the criteria for evaluating something as good or bad art is different from the criteria for evaluating something as good craft. It's easy for craft. You know something is good as a work of craft, provided you know what the end product is supposed to be, and the person makes it. When that happens, you have skillful or good or excellent craft. Well, how do you know what good... creativity is necessary for art, but surely it's not sufficient. That's not all you have to have. Otherwise, an unexpected burp would count as a work of art. So it's got to be novel. Mere novelty is not enough. Mere surprise, novelty, newness is not enough for art. What else do you have to have? Well, try this. Leo Tolstoy, in his book, What is Art?, said that art is a language of the emotions. As speech is the language of thought and allows us to communicate our ideas to one another, so art is a language of the emotions and allows us to communicate to each other what we are feeling. What Tolstoy was saying is not that art enables us to tell each other what we're feeling. If I tell you I am angry, I'm not, in that respect, an artist, necessarily. I'm telling you what I'm feeling. I'm using language as a vehicle of thought or ideas. Art does not tell you what people are feeling. It shows you. Art is a language, just like the language of speech, except it does not communicate ideas or propositions, things that can be either true or false. What it communicates, what it expresses, what it objectifies for us is what people know of the sentient life of human beings. To illustrate this, Tolstoy told a story about a little boy who went into the woods and saw a bear, I think it was. And then he was scared. So he came back and told his family a story about his having run into this bear in the woods. And in the telling of the story, enabled them to perceive, to recognize, to see, if you will, the emotion that he felt originally when he saw the bear. And in that, Tolstoy says, the little boy had created a work of art. That's what art is. That's why, Tolstoy said, you find art everywhere you find human beings, just as you find speech, the language of thought. Everywhere you find human beings, everywhere there is human civilization, there is art, because it is a fundamental human need to express emotion, just as fundamental as it is to express thoughts or ideas. So, art is the expression or the objectification or the embodiment of emotion. It's what enables us to see what human feeling is, Jingle Bell. Do you know the song Jingle Bell? Jingle Bell, Jingle Bell, Jingle All the Way. That song cannot be listened to and understood as a sad song. Maybe when I sing it, it can be, but... it might cause you to feel sad. I mean, say you lost your love when you found one time when Jingle Bells was playing on the radio. So ever thereafter, whenever you hear Jingle Bells, you feel sad. Well, that's different from saying the song is sad. The song is not sad. It's a happy, lively, sprightly song. It embodies those emotions so that you can't listen to the song without perceiving that those feelings are there. The same for all art. According to this, and Tolstoy said, it's plain that art is everywhere. We're all artists. Everybody is an artist in some degree. And by no means is the world's art confined to the world's museums. Let's say you set out to rearrange your room so it'll look better. But you don't know exactly what you want it to look like. You just want it to look better. So you start rearranging stuff and put a Pabst Blue Ribbon poster on the wall and then take it down because that's not quite right and put something else up and move stuff around until finally you see that it's just right. Well, in that process, you've created a work of art. You've created something. You made something, first of all, the end product of which could not be predicted, even by you, at least clearly, and which finally says something, not by the way of words, but by the way of the expression of feeling. So, that's what art is, and it has the implication that we are all artists, at least some of the time, maybe most of the time. What is good art? And what did I do with my watch? Here we go. Okay, a couple of minutes here on evaluating things aesthetically, or what comes as the same thing in terms of their beauty, and then I want to return to country music and see if we can do that for country music. What is good art? If art is what expresses emotion, then an artist is a person who has that intention, as distinct from other kinds of intentions that one might have. That is, an artist is a person who has the intention to make something which expresses or embodies emotion. Let's say that you make up a poem for your sweetheart. Let's say, first of all, that you have one. And then let's say you make up a poem for your sweetheart. And let's say that your aim in making up this poem is to get some affection from her or him, to get some hugs and kisses. And let's say that you do this and you're successful. Well, what you have done is not art, because you have a clearly premeditated, predetermined end in mind. No matter how good the poem is from any other point of view, it's not art and you're not an artist. Let's say, on the other hand, that your intention with regard to your loved one, your sweetheart, is not to secure from her any particular kind of response, but simply to express your feeling. And you don't know exactly what that feeling is, but you want, as R.G. Collingwood talked about in his book, The Principles of Art, you have a kind of inner impulse, an urge to express a feeling, the nature of which, so far, you are ignorant of. You don't know what that feeling is. So you start to write the poem, and finally, it turns out right. It feels right. And you recognize for the first time the feeling that you wanted to express embodied there in the words on the page. And then you give this poem to your loved one. Well, it might secure for you her affection, but whether or not it does, that's not what makes it art. That you have created a work of art now, because it satisfies those two conditions. It's creative, the end cannot be predetermined, and it objectifies or embodies emotion. Okay, anything that does that is good art. Good. I guess I'm assuming that you evaluate the goodness of something depending on what its function is. If it's the function of craft, skillfully and as perfectly as possible to reproduce some clearly perceived end, then good craft is what does that. It's what fulfills that function well. Similarly, if it is the function of art to express emotion, then good art would be what does that well, what succeeds in embodying or objectifying emotion. And a good artist would be one who has that intention and succeeds in fulfilling it. Regardless of what that emotion is, and regardless of whether you as a viewer or reader of art like it or dislike it, are moved by it, approve of it, are disgusted by it, or anything else, none of that has anything to do with the aesthetic goodness that is the beauty of a thing. Thus, I can read Ezra Pound and appreciate his poetry without being a fascist. I can read the Divine Comedy without believing in hell. And so on. It is not essential or even necessary for the emotion that is embodied in a work of art to be agreed with, liked, or whatever by its viewers. The only thing that's necessary is that some tangible public medium embody a feeling, an emotion. Okay, what's good country music then? Well, first of all, country music would be art, provided that it embodies feeling or expresses feeling. What kind of feeling? Well, consider this. If we define country music as the folk music of rural, white, southern American culture, then good country music would be that music which embodies, expresses, or objectifies feelings appropriate to that culture. That is, it expresses those feelings that one would likely experience as a participant in that particular culture. You wouldn't have to be a member of that culture then to appreciate or to be able to recognize what those feelings are. Just as you wouldn't have to be a sailor to recognize the feelings expressed in the old sea shanty about what shall we do with a drunken sailor. But you know, if you hear the song, you can recognize the kinds of feelings that are appropriate to that particular culture. Good country music would be what does that. Enables people vicariously to experience the kinds of tragedies and perversities and feelings that a participant of white, rural, southern American culture would be likely to experience. You can't say what those feelings are. I was trying to, and I realized that you can't. By my own admission, by my own criteria of what art is, you can't say in words, you can't say what those feelings are. Just as you can't say, I mean, that's what art is all about. That's what art does. It tells us. Art tells us what those feelings are, and that's the reason why you can't say, in discursive language at least, what those feelings are. If you want to know what they are, listen to Hank Williams. Listen to Woody Guthrie. Listen to Roy Acuff. And in that music, you'll see what the feelings appropriate for that culture are. Just as you can't say what feelings are appropriate to blues music. I mean, you can talk about it and you can talk around it, but you can't say in words exactly what those are. That's what blues does. If you want to know what the blues are, go down to the Zoo Bar and listen to Magic Slim, and then you'll see. That's the whole function of art. Still, there's one thing I want to say about what accounts for that peculiar kind of excellence that country music is capable of. Country music, I think, shares with American black blues and with, actually, strange as this may seem, European existentialism, a certain attitude about life, a certain attitude about, in particular, the tragic and unfortunate and sad things about life. Namely, it celebrates them. Blues does that, country music does that, and existential philosophy does too. I'll try to say in a few words why that is. For existentialists, there is no such thing as the summum bonum, or the greatest good. It has been the assumption of Western philosophy since the time of Plato and Aristotle that there is such a thing, the greatest good. If you could only find what it is, then you'll be happy and your worries will be over. Okay? Philosophers then, making that assumption, argue about what the greatest good is. Is it pleasure? Is it contemplation of God? Is it fornication? Is it, what is it? But they all assume, most of them, that there is such a thing. Existential philosophy differs from these other philosophical schools of thought in denying that basic assumption. There is nothing that will make you happy. Human life is tragic in the sense that human beings desire happiness, but it's not possible to attain. But that's okay for the existentialist because there are greater values anyway. Even if you could be happy in the sense that all of your desires are satisfied and you have nothing left to do, even if you could be happy in that sense, there are greater values than that. Freedom, creativity, and intensity of experience. For the existentialist, all these things are to be preferred to happiness. So it's not a bad thing, it's a good thing that there is no such thing as the summum bonum. And thus, Dostoevsky says in the Brothers Karamazov that it's better to be free and unhappy than to be happy and unfree. Well, it seems to me that country music has something like that attitude. There are tragedies, there are terrible things that happen to people. Drink, divorce, prison, the crushing brutality of boredom in a job that means nothing to you. These things are real. And country music, distinct in this way from pop music, country music talks about these things, sings about them. And maybe that's why, to a lot of people, it's not very comfortable. Because it does address real things that matter to real people. Well, that, I think, is one of the features that accounts for the excellence of country music whenever it is excellent. Granted that you cannot say fully, in language, what those feelings are that good country music expresses. You look to the music, and that's where you see them. In a general way, I think that this feature, the fact that country music celebrates trouble, adversity, tragedy, and when it's at its best, it does this well. It's that fact that accounts for its peculiar excellence, for its aesthetic goodness, that is to say, its beauty. I have to say one more thing about, as a kind of footnote to this. Much of what goes by the name of country music, to me, is a perversion of this quality. This whiny, maudlin sentimentality that you hear on the radio a lot of the times and on country music stations is not, that's Madison Avenue, that's show business, that's craft, that's trying to produce a predetermined end in people, trying to make them cry or buy records. That's not country music in the best sense of the word. What Porter Wagner talked about in his song about the cold, hard facts of life, that's not sentimental. He wasn't being sentimental. He's trying to address those facts in his music in an honest way, not with an end in view of making people feel all gushy or something. Okay, that's all. That's what I want to say about country music and its aesthetic evaluation. I think myself that we're in for some good stuff in the coming years in country music. There's a whole new breed of country musicians, Randy Travis, C.D. Lang, others, who are, I think they're called neo-traditionalists or something like that. And the music that they're playing, to my ear, is an attempt to get back to those simple acoustic roots. So that's a good sign, I think. We have good things to look forward to in the future in country music. What I'm going to do now is play you a few tunes and exemplify or illustrate, I hope, some categories of country music. Country music is a tremendously diverse and rich hybrid form of music. Just let me give you two or three categories. Bluegrass music is country music. If anything is, bluegrass music is country music. Bluegrass is, again, folk music of white, rural, southern people, which originated specifically in the mountains of Kentucky and Tennessee. It's characterized by, you've got to have a five-string banjo and a complement of stringed instruments, mandolin, guitar, dobro, string bass, Bill Monroe's high nasal tenor should be imitated on any bluegrass musician's repertory of tunes. And bluegrass music is always acoustic. Now, this is going to sound real traditionalist and purist to some of you. But to me, bluegrass music is acoustic. That is, it's not electrified. A bluegrass band with an electric bass is an oxymoron. Well, that's one kind. There's what people call traditional music, which is, as the name suggests, music that attempts to preserve as purely as possible music that was inherited from our European ancestors. There are there's the story song in country music. There are numerous examples of songs that tell stories. It's just not collection of lyrics that happen to be strung together, but there's a story to be told. There's honky tonk music. When country music emerged after World War II and began to come out of that southern seal of isolationism created by slavery and the southern religion, it moved into bars and saloons. And when it did that, you had to have an electric guitar. You had to have drums to be heard over the noise. And you have honky-tonk music, the perfect exemplification of which is Hank Williams. We have both Hank Williams Jr. and Hank Williams Sr. That's honky-tonk music. When you go south, or west, I should say, from the south and looking at the evolution of the music, you run into Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys and Western swing music, which is a curious hybrid of mariachi music from Mexico, southern black blues, and the more traditional inherited elements of music from the old country. The term country western derives from the old Gene Autry and Roy Rogers movies. The kind of music that you heard in those movies is another kind of genre within the wider genre of country music. Jimmy Rogers, Woody Guthrie, they probably deserve niches all to themselves. Well, you can go on, you can see, and make up categories for yourself. The point is, country music is rich, diverse, hybrid, and I'm going to try to illustrate that to you now with a few tunes. Well, let's see, we got 5 minutes. Well, okay, we'll have two tunes. Here's a bluegrass tune. This tune is called Hand Me Down My Walking Cane. That's from what I've just said, it's kind of oxymoronish for me to be playing a bluegrass tune with just a single guitar. You've got to have at least two or three instruments so you can trade off the kind of stylized breaks that are characteristic of bluegrass music. But the song itself ought to give you an idea of what I mean by this category of song. Hand me down my walking cane. Hand me down my walking cane. Hand me down my walking cane. I'm gonna leave on midnight train. All my sins are taken away. I got drunk, kinda landed in jail. I got drunk, kinda landed in jail.
I got drunk and landed in jail. There was nobody for to go my bail, and all my sins are taken away. Hand me down my walking cane. Hand me down my walking cane. Hand me down my walking cane. I'm gonna leave on the midnight train. All my sins are taken away. If I should die in Tennessee, if I should die in Tennessee, I should die in Tennessee, send my bone back COD, cause all my sins are taken away. Hand me down my walking cane, hand me down my walking cane, hand me down my walking cane, I'm gonna leave on the midnight train, oh my sins are taken away.
Thank you. Let's see what other songs I had in mind to do here. Well, I'll do two more here. Here's an example of what I was calling a story song. It's also an example of a murder ballad. It's called The Banks of the Ohio. It's about a guy who asks a young woman to marry him. And she refuses. And so then he does something fairly rash. He sticks a knife in her and throws her in the river. Ask my love to go with me for a walk just a little way. As we walk, now we would talk about our coming wedding day. And darling, say that you'll be mine, and in no other arms entwined. Down beside where the waters flow, down by the banks of the Ohio, I grabbed her by her lily white hand. I led her down to where the waters stand. I picked her up and I pushed her in, and I watched as she floated on down. So darling, say I feel like in those hills I still belong.
the Oklahoma hills where I was born. Way down yonder on the Indian nation, a cowboy life, my occupation in the Oklahoma hills where I was born. As I turned life a page to the land of the great Osage, in the Oklahoma hills where I was born, where the black parole flows and that snow white cotton grows, I feel like in those hills I still belong. Rode my pony on the reservation in the Oklahoma hills I was born. Way down yonder on the Indian nation, a cowboy life, an occupation in the Oklahoma hills I was born. But as I sit here today, many miles I am away from the place I rode my pony through the draw, where the oak and blackjack trees kiss the playful prairie breeze, I feel like in those hills I still belong. Way down yonder on the Indian nation, rode my Chevy on the reservation in the Oklahoma hills I was born. Way down yonder on the Indian nation, a cowboy life, my occupation in the Oklahoma hills.
Today, University Forum has presented Dr. John Walker, Nebraska Wesleyan Philosophy Professor. His lecture was entitled, The Aesthetics of Country Music. This has been University Forum, a presentation of Nebraska Wesleyan University. Nebraska Wesleyan is a private undergraduate liberal arts university located in Lincoln, Nebraska. Approximately 1,300 full-time students are enrolled in more than 40 programs at the university.